All right, you all have the handout. This is the last handout you'll receive from me, entitled Shepherding Through the Stages of Childhood. What Pastor Tripp does in the remainder of his book is he gives instruction for three phases of childhood: infancy to age 4 or 5, childhood age 5 to 12, and then teenagers. I'm only taking the time to deal with the first two segments, mainly because that's where most of our children are, or, you know, I think in that 1 to 12, some of you do have teenagers, and he has some rich material on that. I'm not planning to cover that. So much could be said about parenting. We could undertake this study for months on end, but hopefully you're getting at least some broad perspectives, some major constructs which you'll internalize and which will benefit you, and then continue to do reading and study on your own and dialogue as parents. And what I've commended, probably publicly, but I know privately, young parents, parents of young children, hopefully you are going out on dates with each other. Hopefully you're dating each other. Dating doesn't end when you get married. You ought to have a regular schedule where you're going out as a couple, eventually hiring someone to care for your children so you could be one-on-one. At least at the age where the child becomes a distraction. Make the subject of your child nurture, your child training, a big subject for your dates. It's the greatest project you will undertake together. And as a means of it being a bond to you and not a buffer, talk together on those dates about the process of child rearing. Your wife, the mother, is going to be spending a lot more time with the children. She's going to be clued in to a lot of their behaviors. And we as men need to be brought up to speed as to what's happening, what is the child manifesting, so that we're on the same page. So I suggest that you make that a major subject of your dates when you go out on them. All right, well, let's begin by talking about infancy to childhood, age 4 to 5. He mentions in his book some of the changes that take place. This stage, 0 to 5, is characterized by change. And there are all kinds of changes taking place. There are physical changes. The child goes from being relatively immobile to spastic random motions, to rolling, to sitting, to standing, to walking, and being able to feed him or herself. There are social changes. The child begins one-on-one with mom. And then those relationships extend to other family and friends. The child learns his or her own style of relating, what wins approval with others and what does not. And so there are social changes taking place. When I finish this section, I'll ask maybe for some commentary from what you have experienced or are experiencing with your little ones. There are intellectual changes taking place, rapid intellectual growth. The child's learning to talk more correctly. The whole world is a schoolroom for learning. They learn by touch, by sight, by sound, and by taste, sometimes putting things in their mouth that shouldn't be put in their mouth, and we have to rescue them. And of course, you have to watch about little things, little objects that a child could choke on, right? That's all part of preparing the environment for your child. Little round things, grapes get cut into quarters or halves because a child could choke on a grape. You have to watch out because they instinctively put things in their mouths. When it comes to learning to talk, I remember that sometimes children mispronounce things, and it's so endearing, you almost don't want to tell them the correct way of saying it, right? Remember when my son used to say for hospital, it was like hospital, blah, 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 blah. And I thought it was so cute. You know, do we really tell him the right way to say it? It's just so cute. We want to hear him continue to say it that way. But no, we have to correct him to say it the right way. So these are areas of change. What might you comment on in terms of your own experience? Some of you young parents, what are some changes that are taking place? Babies are changing even within the womb, right? They're kicking up a storm, and you learn something about the baby even before it's born, right? Whether it's going to be active and get me out of here, or a little sedated, maybe down there reading a book and just content to do that. Well, the Bible says your words were found and I ate them, and right, Jeremiah. So any commentary on your own experience with the little ones growing, changing? Dan.
I've just enjoyed with the kids that Sarah has been nannying. I've enjoyed watching them kind of learn to think and look at, to see them like grow, and they're just how they process things, and that has been really cool just to watch that, like them learning how to put two and two together, even just like this means this and whatever.
Yeah. And the whole world is a schoolroom to them, and everything is new, right? And I suggest as parents that you enter into that with them, things that you take for granted, because they're looking at God's creation. And they're marveling at things for the first time, and you just assume, you know, these things, and we can overlook so many of the beauties and wonders and the grandeur of God's creation, which they're discovering for the first time. So enter into their child's world, because it's your Father's world as well, and delight like a child in your Father's world as they are delighting with things for the first time. Any other stories?
Aware of this is happening. It's like, she's able to clue into all of those social clues that something's wrong. Mommy's sad. Yeah. And that's like, wow, she's aware of that. But that's what's scary is when they say, "Daddy angry?" I'm like, oh, they're starting to realize Daddy's getting angry, and they're picking up on those cues too. And all of a sudden, my sin, which is all was pretty unnoticed before, is all of a sudden being noticed by this little person. And now there's not this sort of immobile baby. I have another conscience judging me, and I was, I am sinning. Daddy, sorry, forgive me for getting angry. And it's they're changing rapidly, and sometimes it's surprising.
Yeah. And like we said before, there are little clues to their makeup. You know, maybe Katie's going to have a gift of mercy, and she's especially sensitive to people's emotional frame. Others children won't notice that, but Pete, get the mic.
I'm not going to mention the name, but one of our children was very afraid of people who were dressed up as characters. And we realized that we were in Chuck E. Cheese, and he was scared to death of the mouse. My wife said to this child, said, this, you know, it was only a person child dressed up in a suit. And all of a sudden the light went on, like, oh, I guess it's okay. So it was proof to us that we should have asked more questions. Why were you afraid of these things? And then we would have found out and could have saved a lot of trouble, aggravation for us, if we'd asked better questions.
Yeah. All right. Any other entertaining stories of some of the ones aren't talking yet, but once they start to talk, you'll have more stories. Okay. Well, what's the training objective at this stage, 0 to 5? Ephesians 6:1-3, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. This is the first commandment with a promise. What's the promise? That it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. The training objective at this stage is that they learn to submit to authority. From infancy on, the principle of authority and submission must be inculcated into the child. They need to learn from the beginning that they've been made by God and they've been made for God, and it is God who is the basis for them submitting to mom and dad, because God has established all human authority and God has put you as parents over them, and that's why they need to obey. So right from the very beginning, you want to be teaching them about God. You want them to have a God-centered worldview. Mommy and daddy are requiring you to submit to us, to obey us, because God has put us in charge of you. And Tripp says you need to paint the picture for the child that there is a circle of safety within which that child will be blessed. And that circle of safety is the boundaries of obedience. As long as that child submits and obeys, the blessing of life and long life will be given to the child. You know how the Proverbs warn those who curse father and mother, those who mock The eye that mocks father and mother, the raven of the valley will pick it out. There are warnings in the Proverbs that if you defy authority, your life may well be cut short. Now, you know with the Proverbs, they're not absolute promises. They're general principles that are generally true, and there are always exceptions. But that's one of them, that an obedient, submissive life will often be a long life. And you can see the common sense reason for that. If people don't learn submission in the home, they're going to go out and they're going to defy other authorities, and they're going to shorten their life by that defiance and that rebellion. And so you want to teach the child that this is the circle of blessing. Stay within that circle. As long as you submit to mommy and daddy, obey them, then God will bless you. And he talks about honor requiring two things. And I think on the sheet there you have some fill in the blanks. What does honor require? Honor your father and mother. First of all, that parents train the child to respect their parents. They need to respect you. And then the corollary to that is that parents be honorable in their conduct and demeanor. You need to work hard to be respectable. And their duty is to respect you. Just make as an aside, that's a duty we have as husbands, by the way. You know, your wife is commanded to respect you. She's commanded to respect you. What is our duty? To be as respectable as we can be, to make her job easy. But that's something we want to do with our children. We want to be respectable in our conduct, so that makes it as easy as possible for them to fulfill their command to honor us by respecting us. Honor is expressed by the child in several ways. The child should never speak in imperatives to the parent. The child isn't to give you commands. The child's not in charge. The child's not over you. The child is under you. So that's something the child shouldn't do. It's not consistent with honor. The child should never speak to dad or mom as he or she would a peer. I remember a strange thing. When I was growing up, my nearest friend lived across the street. He was 3 years older than me. Was quite a rebellious boy. In fact, we used to compare him to Eddie Haskell. We've talked about Eddie Haskell from Leave It to Beaver. You know, he was, you know, the guy who would come in, "Oh, hello, Mrs. Cleaver." And then he'd go up and he'd be this cool dude with Wally and, you know, he'd totally flip. And my friend was somewhat like that. But I remember the strangest thing when we were young, and he would occasionally refer to his parents by their first names. And I thought, that is so strange to me. I remember what their names were. And he would, and at first I thought, who are you talking? Oh, he's talking about his parents. That was so foreign from my thinking, not even in a Christian home. But you just don't do that. You don't refer to your parents. It's mom and dad, but not first name. And so there was definitely disrespect there. And you know, there were reasons for him to not respect. And the good news is later on in life, I think in his 30s, he got converted and has been walking with God for the last 30 years, as far as I know. Almost 40, maybe. Never speak to mom and dad as a peer. Always show proper respect. Let me read a segment from Tripp, page 159. In terms of speaking respectfully, he says, this can be done kindly through statements such as these. I'm sorry, dear, if you're correcting the child for lack of respect. I'm sorry, dear, but you may not speak to me in that way. God has made me your mother and has said that you must treat me with honor. Now, let's see if there is a respectful way you can express what you wish to say. Or, dear, I'm not one of your chums. You may speak to your friends in a flippant manner, but you may not speak to me in that way. Now, what was it that you wanted to say? Or, dear, you cannot give me orders. You may make requests, but you cannot give me orders because God has made me the authority over you. Now, next page, a parent who is respectful to his children and teaches them with dignity and respect will be respected by his children. You may not yell at your children. You do not make them your slaves. Suffering indignities from you cannot be a part of submission to authority. When you fail to be respectful or courteous or sin against them, you must seek forgiveness. There's a sowing and reaping principle here. Whatever you sow, you shall reap. it is as true in child rearing as it is anywhere. So that speaks to the issue of you being respectable. Be respectful toward your children. If you're asking them to respect you, treat them with respect. And that's consistent with your authority. Be respectful toward them and of them. And then obedience. Their two duties are to honor and to obey. What is obedience? It's doing what the child is told without three things: challenge, without excuse, and without delay. I've used the language immediately, completely, and sweetly. Your children ought to obey you, and you need to train them to obey without challenge, without excuse, without delay. Tripp says, when a child's first response is to gripe or complain about unfairness, that is not obedience. When a child's response is to make excuses, that's not obedience. When a child refuses to respond at once, that's not obedience. And then another quote from him. An example: dear, I want you to go to bed now. There's only one appropriate response. It is not, I'll go as soon as I finish coloring this page. It is not, why do I always have to go to bed so early? It is not to ignore you entirely. There's only one obedient response. It is to go to bed without delay. If you accept any other response, you are training your children to disobey. But then he goes on to qualify. Well, first of all, he says you need to be consistent in this. Otherwise, it becomes a moving target for the child, and it becomes confusing to them. Rules must be the same, and you must be faithful to discipline every clear infraction. But then he talks about permission to appeal. You know, lest you be overly severe, we give the child an opportunity to appeal and to make a request, right? We don't want to be so rigid and so hard-nosed that, you know, we demand immediate obedience, and we may be insensitive to the child's circumstances or desires. What is a great biblical example of an appeal to authority that's done respectfully, often pointed to in the Bible? Samuel? Daniel, yes. And what was that appeal that Daniel made? What was requested of him? What was required of him? And what appeal did he make? Anybody? Ron? Yeah. He was being constrained to eat a Babylonian pagan diet, some of which would have been a violation of his Jewish dietary laws. And so he recognized the king's noble desire. He presumably wanted healthy servants, healthy young men. He said, he offered an alternative, right? Water and vegetables, and see if after that time, you know, we're not healthier than the rest. So it still accomplishes his ends, and it doesn't violate Daniel and his friend's conscience. So it's a great model of an appeal made to authority, and there was a good outcome. So Tripp says, because a parent ought not to accept any form of disobedience, the rigidity of this standard needs to be tempered, but only by permission to appeal. Children are people. They've got their own thoughts. They've got their own feelings. And we should give them an outlet to appeal to us. And it serves a couple of purposes. It keeps us from being unreasonable in our demands, and it gives the child an outlet so the child doesn't feel as though he's being trapped and being oppressed. Here's a pattern for appeal, and again, citing Tripp. These are some important guidelines to follow in making a biblical appeal. You begin to obey immediately, not after the appeal. So the child needs to begin to obey because you don't want conditional obedience. You must appeal in a respectful manner. And this is something you need to train your child to do. You must be prepared to obey either way. You must accept the result of the appeal with a gracious spirit. Mother says, it's time to go to bed. The child begins to head for bed. And while en route may ask, is it okay if I finish coloring the picture first? Mother may say, yes, that would be okay. Or she may say, no, dear, you were up late last night. You need your sleep. Whichever the child Whichever, the child must be prepared to obey without challenge, without excuse, without delay. It should be our habit to say yes to a request, unless there are good reasons to say no. It is easy to make authoritarian choices simply out of convenience. So we want to be reasonable parents, right? Not unreasonable, dictatorial, hard-nosed, heavy-handed parents. But we do want, and it's a privilege to do that when the child is respectful. And you're training the child that, you know, mom and dad, we're easy, we're flexible. We know you have feelings, you have desires, and we're not trying to crush those. But we're going to honor it when you're respectful. And we're not going to honor disrespect and give in to your will and your assertiveness. But we are reasonable. We can be appealed to. I'll make one more comment, and then you can comment. Parental example. Okay, this brings it home. We're asking them to obey. We're asking them to submit to our authority. What do you think we need to do or be so far as our example? I think you can answer this. And for the sake of the tape here, I'll repeat what you say. What does that require of us? We're saying to these little ones, you must obey me. You must submit to me. You must honor me. You must respect me. Andy? Okay, yeah. First of all, we need to model obedience to God, right? And the very fact that we're exercising this parental authority is one act of obedience to God, presuming that we're doing it in a godly way. What else does that impinge on us as parental examples? You need to obey us because God put us over you. Alex? Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We need to submit, just to repeat for the sake of those listening, we need to submit to those authorities God has put over us. And you mentioned which ones? The police, the governmental authorities, pastors, elders have a certain authority. Obey your leaders. Submit to them. They keep watch over your souls. And work authorities, employers. Yes. Lindsay? Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Wives to husbands, husbands treating their wives respectfully in the way you speak to one another. You need to be a consistent model. I think Paul and then Beth. Yes. So wives, I mean, husbands are to be respectful, obviously, toward their wives, but wives have a similar hupotasso under, so they have a particular opportunity, shall we say, to model that for the children. And Beth. Yes, yes, yeah, that's right, that's right. If you're coming home complaining about your boss, you know, and they hear you over the dinner table just grumbling about your boss, and you may talk somewhat objectively about situations, but if they see you just grumbling, complaining, and being insubordinate, you know, you're going to lose some credibility, and you're going to model something that's, or if you're, one of the things I often would not tell the Amish to leave the Amish. I just give them truth and let the truth take root in their hearts, and then in God's time, you know, they usually leave or are put out. But one thing that impinged on my conscience was in this area where Amish people who had young children, they're subjecting them to false teaching. And then I remember one man, father of 11, saying, I have to come home and I have to re-preach the sermon every week because it's error. And I remember saying to him and others, you know what, you're training your children that you really shouldn't respect spiritual authorities because you're putting them under spiritual authorities that can't be obeyed. And that's one reason for taking them out from under that, because spiritual authorities are to be worthy of respect and respected. And if you can't respect them, then you're undermining that principle of obey your leaders, submit to them. And that's one rationale for Amish with young children to get out of there and put their whole family under spiritual authorities they can respect and can obey that scripture. So, any other thoughts? Yeah, Grace and Diana. Yes. See, this parenting has everything to do with our walk with God. It's not just a matter of mechanical technique, is it? It always comes back on who are we and how are we living, because, you know, as that poem says, which I think I'd read to you, children learn what they live. And we are the initial impression upon them of what it is to be a Christian and to know God. So our example is so crucial on every front. Diana? Yeah, that's right. Because that's an area where we're going to be disrupting their plans. Well, I want to stay up and do... Well, no, dear, you were up late last night, and you really do need to get to bed. We're disrupting their plans. We're raining on their parade or their picnic. And then, in His providence, God's going to rain on some of our picnics and parades. How are we going to respond, like you're saying, right? Are we saying, well, you know, we had intended this. Many are the plans in a man's heart, but the counsel of the Lord had other plans. We sweetly submit to that. They see us doing that. Otherwise, you know, they have a just charge of hypocrisy. And it doesn't exonerate them from obeying, but it makes it more difficult for them to obey when they're not seeing us doing that. So there's a lot of weight of responsibility on us. David.
This is not so much just about parental example, but this was a very helpful summary. When we first had Emily, she was 82. We went down to Richmond. Some of you may know about Pastor Brackett, if you remember him. And he had maybe four children. Well, I don't know what their ages were at the time. But we came to their house. We were new parents. And the four children were so well behaved, seated, it was helpful, and everything was wonderful. And he said to us, he summarized this whole issue of authority. He said, by the time the child is 5 years old, he said, basically, you pass or fail on this one rule. Do they understand that there's authority outside of themselves? And he said, that's kind of like, there's a lot of things you want to teach them. He said, do they understand there's authority outside of themselves? If they do, then you kind of pass. If they don't, and you need to do by example as well. But they need to understand that. That was just such a helpful little summary throughout the years. Mm. And I've shared that with other people. Kind of, that is a fundamental thing that we need to do, is just have them understand that you are not your final authority.
Yes.
And that's through our own example, but also through the way that we bring God's law to them.
Yes.
That was just very helpful to us. At the beginning of our parenting.
Yeah, and that echoes what Tripp is saying, that basically that's the main responsibility to inculcate into them that they need to be submissive to an authority over them. That's the big issue in 0 to 5. Now, it has everything to do with the gospel also, because we know that by nature we are not submissive. What does Romans 8:7 say, speaking of the unbeliever? The natural, or the those who are in the flesh, are not subject to the law of God, neither can they be. Our natural, native, born condition is insubordination, right? All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned everyone to his own way. We're born with our backs turned toward God. We are not submissive to God. So submission to authority is not native to us. And as you confront your children's insubordination, their sinful self-will, it's a wonderful opportunity for the gospel. Because the gospel is, you don't just need a little tune-up, you don't need just a little adjustment in your morality, a little tweak in your behavior. You, child, need a new heart. Why don't you want to obey? Why can't you obey? It's because you need a new heart. And only God can give you a new heart. And you need to put your trust in Jesus. So all of those manifestations of insubordination and willfulness, unsubmissiveness, lack of respect and honor are an occasion for the gospel. We need to use them as such, that this is why Jesus came, to change you, to change us, to give us a new heart, to give us salvation. So these are gospel opportunities. What are the benefits of submission? Well, according to Ephesians 6:3, children, obey your parents in the Lord. This is right. It's the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Now, this is an interesting example of a little tweaking from the old covenant to the new covenant. The original statement of the Ten Commandments was what? That you may live long on the land which the Lord your God is giving you, because he was giving them a piece of real estate. Under the new covenant, God does not give us a piece of real estate, at least not yet. Eventually, he's going to give us the whole earth. But that you may live long on the earth. And so there's a little bit of a New Testament application of that commandment, of that fifth command. But that you may live long on the earth. Like I said earlier, long life is generally associated with submission and obedience. The eye that mocks father and mother, the raven of the valley, the eagle of the valley, will pick it out. So it'll go well with them. It will also lay a foundation for the entire parent-child relationship. You need to put those strokes in early, and it will go easier for you in the later years. Now, you're going to have all kinds of variability, and depending on if and when God converts your child, obviously that makes a huge difference. And sometimes it's going to be a battle of the wills all the way through 18 years, and only God's going to have to, you know, conquer the will by grace. But you lay that foundation early, and you'll have something to build on. Becomes difficult when a person is converted and their children are in their adolescent and teen years. You know, they still need to establish that authority, but that concrete is a lot more set. So you want to work with it when the concrete is wet and establish this principle. And like earlier, it will give an understanding of the gospel. I need God's help against my fleshly rebellious nature. I must submit to God and receive a righteousness outside of myself. So all of their displays of insubordination and rebellion are an occasion to point them to their need for the gospel. Any additional thoughts on that? We're going to move on to training procedures. Sarah.
I guess in talking about the submission and authority, how do you, I'm trying to think of like the safety of the children too. How do you find the balance of, yes, they need to submit to authority, but they not everyone, they don't have to submit to anything anyone says, and where do they have their own personhood? Like, if someone asks them to do something that's not right, like, how do you find the balance of teaching them, like, what is proper authority to listen to, and you don't just submit to what everyone says?
Okay. We have first attempt at an answer here.
Well, I think we've said this before, but I think it's really important. I think this is foundational to that question and to the whole issues of authority and submission. We always have to go back to the fact that the ultimate authority is God, and that no, like Jesus said to Pilate, you have no authority over to me unless it's given to you. That's true of every authority. The authority of government is given by God. the sword. It's true of every authority, so we should always be teaching that the authority over them isn't just the visible human authority, it's divine authority delegated.
Mm-hmm.
The one you see is in the way between you and God.
Yeah.
They're just the mediator of God's authority. And so if they are not submitting to God, there's a reason to question that authority. And if they're, unless you can overtly see that they're, that authority is opposing God's authority,
yeah. Yeah.
Therefore not handing down God's authority,
yeah.
But rather than taking their own, usurping,
yeah.
Then they should be obedient to them.
Yeah, that's good. So in training them to obey us, because they're in doing so, they're obeying God, and in making the things we're calling them to submit to God's word, we're really doing them a favor. We're training them to discern. We obey this because God says it. Because there is a time in life to not obey, right? Where the apostles said we must obey God rather than men. And there will be occasions where wives must not submit to their husbands who are asking them to sin, right? Where even children may not be able to obey their parents. There are times when, you know, people are teaching false things and you shouldn't submit to that. And if the government, you know, required that you have an abortion, you can't. So by bringing God as the authority, we're teaching them also to discern when to obey and when not to, because it has to be lined up with God. So that's a safeguard against their gullibility and just, you know, obeying every authoritative voice that comes down the pike. Has to have the stamp of God.
Paul's comment here too, but I want to just throw something else in there. I think we might be a little outside of our age range. At the early range,
yeah,
the kids aren't going to be able to do any of that. So
yeah.
I think what we want to focus on is parents are the authority that they should look to. So that that's a responsibility parents are going to have, to say, I'm representing God to you children. So you're seeing God's authority invested in me as your dad or mom. Look to me and have authority. And then I may delegate that authority. So you look to me. Should I obey that person? I'm saying, no, that's your Sunday school teacher. You need to obey that person. I've now delegated from God to me to that person, you mm-hmm. child. Now you look to me. That's the person you obey. Now you, this random person that comes up to you, do not obey that person.
Mm-hmm.
That is not authority given to I'm not giving that person any authority. Mm-hmm. Unless you know it from me, don't obey them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have some respect, some safe places like church. You say, these are safe people. You should obey that. Mr. Pete said something to you. You obey Mr. Pete, right? But they teach the children to look to you as the representative of God in their life and helping them. And then as they grow up, you start applying those other paths.
But the foundation is laid in
the
those
Pauls
early
are
years.
In agreement.
Okay. Well, we have two witnesses to that. Okay. Andy.
I think to add to the point to that, that especially at that young age, it's parents' responsibility to protect them from bad authorities and to judge for them. This is a person that you should follow. That stranger on the street, you shouldn't go and talk to that stranger and follow that.
Yeah, that's good. And so also in the realm of parental example, they'll hear you around the dinner table at a young age, you know, talking about error and talking about things that we should avoid and company we should avoid. And so we're training them to be discerning. Lindsay.
I don't have an answer to that question, but just going back to how important the gospel is in your kids, like in their upbringing, I see it with my students all the time because most, if not all of them, don't have that background. Like, I'm trying to tell them, well, you need to be kind to this person even when they're annoying you. And it just struck me. I was like, why? You know, there's no basis for me to even tell them why they should be kind. Like, it makes no sense if you can't explain this is what God says.
That's right. Very good. And Beth in the back has a comment.
We actually just had a real-life example of, you know, our children needing to obey us when someone else is telling them not to. We were at a family's house for Thanksgiving, and there's this rocking horse, old rocking horse, that Jared was not allowed to be on when he was a child, so there's no way we were going to let our children be on it. And so we had been telling them no all day, and a family member later was trying to get Charlotte to sit on the rocking horse, and she was like, no. My mom said no, so I can't go on that, you know. And so it was because of the foundation of mom and dad are the authority, I'm not going to listen to you because you're telling me something opposite of what my mom and dad are saying to do. And the other suggestion I have that, you know, in terms of how are we giving autonomy to our children and letting them make good decisions is we call adults, we can say sometimes there are tricky adults. If someone is trying to trick you into doing something that goes opposite of what mom and dad say, ultimately opposite of what God says. And so that's kind of the term we use instead of like stranger danger, because strangers can sometimes become friends and sometimes strangers are not friends. So we use the term tricky adults. So that's just something we use, if that's helpful.
That's good to have little descriptive phrases. I had already confessed to you that we went to see the movie The Incredibles, right? A little cartoony movie. And The Incredibles, Mr. Incredible and his family, they all had different superpowers. And I thought one redeeming truth from that movie is they had trained their daughter not to use her particular superpower. I forget what it was. I think, was it? Invisibility, that's right. The boy was the real fast one. He could zip around. You saw it too. Okay, take note of that. Pete saw it multiple times. But I thought it was a redeeming truth that later on in the movie, when they needed her superpower, she was resisting it because her mom had trained her, you don't use this power. Now we need it for you to save our lives. But I thought, isn't that good? It was a good illustration of the fact that she was trying to obey something and now it was getting reversed, and an illustration of the fact that she had learned submission to her parents. Now her mom was trying to reverse that, and that was difficult. Okay. Tripp has a quote about the role of the gospel here. He says, "The gospel seems irrelevant to the smug child who isn't required to do anything he does not want to do. It seems irrelevant to the arrogant child who has been told all his life how wonderful he is. But the gospel has great relevance for the child who is persuaded that God calls him to do something that is not native to his sinful heart, to joyfully and willingly submit to the authority of someone else. Only the power of the gospel can give a willing heart and the strength to obey." All right, now the next section has to do with training procedures. Again, still dealing with 0 to 5. When to spank. And he says, whenever you give a directive, a child has heard and is able to understand and has not obeyed, without challenge, without excuse, without delay, what I say immediately, completely, and sweetly, that's when child needs to be spanked. You need to be consistent. Don't accept challenge, delay, or excuses. Speak the first time as the last. Now, I'm dealing with 0 to 5 here. And, you know, way back in the 60s, James Dobson, you know, who I think has leaned a lot on secular psychology, but had a lot of wisdom, and in his book, what was it, Dare to Discipline in the 60s, I think, or 70s, you know, would draw this out and show how parents let the children train them, you know, until you go the 5th, the 6th, the 7th time, and finally you reach a certain decibel level and the child says, oh, you know, mom is serious now, I need to obey. But not until then, because, you know, you've allowed the child to train you that not until all this emotional output, do you really mean business? Well, it's a matter of simple logic. If you can train the child to obey on the 5th command at a certain decibel level, you can train the child to obey on the 1st command, assuming the child understands and is able to do what you're asking. There's no and basically, it's right. Basically, it's going to save you a lot of emotional wear and tear. But more basically, you need to represent God that way, because God means what he says and says what he means, and we need to reflect him. So, again, at that young age, when that obedience isn't rendered in that way, it warrants a spanking. Murray. God doesn't count to 5. God doesn't count to 5, yeah. Hand back there? No. Okay. How to spank. And we've been through some of this. It's worth repeating. Avoid responding in anger. Avoid treating the child without respect for his person and dignity. Even when you're spanking a child, you need to be respectful. That's a human being made in the image of God. Balance unwavering firmness with kindness and gentleness. Focus on issues of the heart. Discipline in private, right? Showing respect. Even Paul writes to the Corinthians, and I'm not writing this to shame you. You're not to shame the child. And so you take the child off to a private place. You don't shame your child publicly. Discipline in private. Explain the wrong, the reason for the spanking. It should be issue-oriented, not capricious. And here, I quote Tripp. The conversation may go like this. Daddy told you that you should pick up your toys, didn't he? Yes, nodding. You didn't obey me, did you? No, looking down. You know what Daddy must do. Daddy must spank you. So it's calm, it's reason. The child knows exactly what he's getting disciplined for. Explain the purpose for the spanking, to restore him to a place of safety and blessing. We want you to obey because that will be for your blessing, for your happiness. Remember that circle of blessing. We want you to get back in that circle because you got out of that circle. Tell him or her how many whacks you're going to deliver. Show control. Don't waste energy paddling through diapers or pants. You know, that's not going to have the desired effect. Afterward, take the child on your lap. Hug her. Express your love and sadness to have to do this. Check your spirit for any offense, such as lack of control, disrespect, and ask forgiveness. If you did it wrong on any of those fronts, ask forgiveness. And then check his or her spirit, making sure he is sweet with a broken will, not defiant and not angry. All discipline for the moment seems painful, sorrowful, not pleasant, but afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by. You want to make sure that the child is in a peaceable frame. That shows you that the discipline has been effective. And then finally, why spank? Because God commands it in His Word, and it gives opportunity to deal with the child's heart. You discipline to get the child's attention to address not just the behavior, but as we've been saying all along, to address the child's heart, using behavior as a window to the heart. The outward behavior reveals the heart. And so it gets the child's attention. It's a tactile way of getting the child's attention so that you can give instruction to the heart. The rod and reproof give wisdom. So that's enough for today. Any final comment in the last 2 minutes? Abby.
I had a question about at what age you would end, because we're talking about not spanking through a diaper or through pants, but also we have to take into account a person's dignity. So yeah. When is this ending? Because we're not going to be pulling the pants down of an older child.
Yeah.
So what is an older child?
That's a good question. You know, I asked my wife the other week, I said, honey, when did we stop spanking our child? I don't think either of us could remember. I think there was a sense of instinct as to when it was right, but maybe somebody else has an answer. Andy.
I'll just say I remember the last spanking I ever got, and I turned around and said to my dad, wow, that didn't even hurt anymore. and I felt like it had been a year or so since I had last been spanked before that. And after that, my dad never used that as a punishment again.
Okay.
That was probably around 7 or 8.
I got the paddle as a fraternity brother in college, and I can tell you that hurt. But but anybody else remember?
I think it varies from child to child, depending on how sensitive they are to that discipline. One of our children, the latest we spanked them was 11, but he was having severe attitude problems, and we spanked him. And I think that was probably the last time we had to spank him. But the attitude changed immediately. Hmm. I don't remember. No, I don't think so. Well, I didn't have to because I was pretty strong. So, but I think it varies from child to child. And, you know, you can't sometimes one more spanking, whenever that is, you know, you have, I don't know if you can say, you got to stop at 5 or you got to stop at 8. I think it varies from child to child. And I think that's something you have to rely on wisdom from God when to say it's enough.
Yeah.
But yes, you want to protect their dignity. Yeah. You don't want to do it in public, and you want to do it in private, and you want to do it right.
Yeah. All right. Well, our time is up. And if any, that's a good question to contemplate. If anybody has any further answer, I honestly couldn't remember. I do remember, I think God gave us wisdom and instinct, and I don't ever remember taking away a child's dignity, but for the life of me, I can't remember what age. I don't even know if my children can, because in our case, they forget that they were ever spanked. Maybe good, maybe not. Let's pray. Our Father, thank you for every particle of wisdom that comes from you and from your word, and thank you for the things we have discussed this morning. We pray that all that is in accord with your truth, that it be internalized by the parents among us, that they would implement these things, and that you would honor your ways and impart grace, even saving grace, to the hearts of the children among us. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.